everyone, and welcome to the next edition of the VTX podcast. Here at the Veterinary Thought Exchange, we like to start by asking, what are you thinking? And this week, we're going to be thinking about raw feeding. So this is one of our clinical segments, our Just a Thought segments. And this week, our Just a Thought is the raw feeding discussion. And we're thrilled to be joined again by Sean to have this discussion and really to empower you as veterinary professionals to have those tricky conversations about nutrition, about diet, and about raw feeding, which is definitely a very topical issue and one that will be brought up in the consulting room quite commonly. So I really hope you enjoy our discussion today. Okay, so Sean, thank you so much for joining us again on the podcast with a slightly different sort of hat on, you know, today when we're having a bit of a clinical discussion. And we have been doing a series of Just a Thought episodes where we have just a thought on a clinical topic. And our topic today is raw feeding and some controversies in what we feed our companion animals, really, our cats and dogs. So I wonder if you can just very quickly introduce yourself to the audience, if that's okay.
Sure thing. Yeah, my name's Sean McCormick, and I'm a vet who has a background in clinical practice, an undergrad degree in animal science, which was quite nutrition focused. And after about 6 years in practice, I moved into industry, and I now work as head vet for a nutrition brand. And a conflict of interest declaration is that my nutrition brand that I work for is not a raw feeding brand. Mm-hmm. But I would love to just discuss the kind of pros and cons and examine the evidence base or some of the claims made in the kind of raw feeding debate, because unfortunately, it is often a debate and it could get quite heated.
Yeah. And I think that's very much the purpose of these kind of segments. We're trying to just make this very, you know, useful for veterinary professionals to, you know, be able to have a little bit more information, to have those discussions with our clients. And I think the reason that this is a difficult topic, you know, should we feed our dogs raw food, is because I think a lot of the clients that do feed their pets raw food are extremely passionate about it, and believe very strongly that they, you know, that is the right thing for their dog. And I wonder, one of the other things that I find really interesting and kind of do talk about a bit is that I think we do run the risk of this maybe becoming divisive in a way that we kind of are maybe not engaging with people and actually, you know, getting to the crux of actually having good conversations, because I wonder whether it is becoming a bit of a them and us situation where the owners want to feed, or the you know, our clients want to feed raw food and they're very pro, and the vets are all like, no, I've heard that that's not the right thing. I'm not 100% sure always why it's not the right thing, but I feel like I should be saying, no, you shouldn't do that. And actually then I'm not sure anyone's winning because we're not having productive conversations. I don't know if you would agree with that.
I would. I totally agree. And if you had spoken to me maybe 10 years ago, 8 years ago, I maybe would have been a little more vocal and maybe a little stronger on, you know, we should or shouldn't do this, or, you know, actually, you know, here's the finger waggy bit of the risks and things like that. I think it's fantastic that pet owners are taking an interest, more of an interest, and becoming passionate about their pets' nutrition and health. That is a fantastically positive thing. I think on the flip side, you know, as a veterinary profession, there's a lot of kind of harsh words and misconceptions around our motivations as veterinary professionals as well. And social media and online forums sometimes don't help that. There is a them and us with just vets and pet owners sometimes as well. So I do think we need to be respectful of people's decisions, and we need to provide supportive educational content or discussion around, what is this issue? Why is it divisive? How can I help you to make the right decision for you and your pet? So, you know, my position now on raw feeding, as opposed to several years ago, is, it's out there, people are doing it. If you're going to do it, here are my top tips for doing it as correctly as possible and as safely as possible, because there are some risks. But yeah, I've examined the evidence over and over again, and any new studies that come out, you know, I'm well aware of. And unfortunately, there are a lot of the proponents of raw feeding are really either A, talking about like anecdotal reports of my dog is better on raw, therefore raw is good, or they're misconstruing really what results they're getting and attributing it to it's because this food is raw. But actually, if that same food, the same raw food was cooked, it might have achieved the same effect. And there's lots of subtleties in that. And then as well, the final thing I think is that it's a very like vigorous debate, and it's a very contentious topic sometimes. But a lot of the proponents of raw, and certainly a lot of the brands that advocate their product, there is an element of scaremongering and negative marketing about traditional pet food, which is the thing that really, really annoys me, because you shouldn't have to denigrate all of your competitors in order to sell your product.
I think I do think that's an excellent point. Like, I think that and then it just all starts to become messy, doesn't it? Because people are, and I think that there's space for different diet options too. Like, there's obviously not one diet that fits all dogs and cats. Like, I mean, I'm sure that's true, that's true too. So I suppose if we start just with the top line, is raw food bad?
Let's start with, is raw food good?
Okay, good, fine.
Again, going back to this, anecdote is not evidence, right? And a lot of things are hung on kind of anecdote, and my dog does better on raw, therefore raw is good. Unfortunately, and I'm going to go through the list of claims that raw proponents make about raw feeding being good. Unfortunately, there is not very much or any convincing evidence that show benefits of feeding raw over cooked food. And that's unfortunate. I am an evidence-based clinician, veterinarian. I would love to see convincing evidence, and when I do, I will change my mind. But a lot of the claims that are made are either based on very kind of wobbly evidence, or there's no evidence at all, or some of the evidence that applies to very niche situations or scenarios gets kind of put out or trotted out as applicable to all. So, what are the claims that raw is good? The first one I hear is that my dog does better on raw. My dog is transformed. His health is better. He's happier. These kind of general health, well-being statements about your dog. What I would say there is, if you look at homeopathy or the placebo effect, or doing any kind of intervention for your dog, bringing them to hydrotherapy, there it's noted in the scientific literature, whether you're dealing with owners of pets or whether you're dealing with parents and children, if you've opted for an intervention that's cost you time and effort and money to improve your child or pet's health, you will very, very much over indicate on saying that that health outcome has improved. So that's known. That's human psychology. We want to believe that what we've just done or what we've just changed has had a positive impact. Otherwise, we've kind of wasted our time, effort, or money. So there's a very powerful thing there. There's also a very powerful kind of community buy-in, or what I like to call, being part of the enlightened few. So a lot of the marketing around raw food is, you're a terrible pet owner. If you're feeding traditional kibble or cooked food or whatever, you need to feed raw because XYZ, and you'll be amazed at the results. And then there's all these forums of converts who have done it, and they're like, oh, my dog's so much better. And that's a powerful community or social structure that buys people in and sort of says, you're part of our gang now. Come on board and you be as vocal as us. So there's a powerful element of that involved as well. None of that is evidence, by the way.
Is it not? No.
Well, okay, so well, one kind of scenario where it might be evidence, but it's not very well documented, is my dog has allergies, or my dog has had itchy skin for years and I can't get to the bottom of it. And my vet said it might be environmental, it might be food, I don't know what it is. I switched my dog to raw and he stopped scratching. Right. What's happened there? Maybe that dog has been on 27 different brands of food in its 6 years of life. Maybe it's eating, 16 different treats foods, wet, dry, whatever, during each week of its life. And there's a multitude of ingredients going into that dog. And when they've chosen to feed in a very quite radical and very different way with a very simplified ingredient list of raw food, grain-free, da da da, the dog gets better, not because that food is raw, but because they've simplified the diet and they've made a commitment to really feed in a very, very different way. So there can be evidence that raw feeding my dog improved its health. I'm not denying that. But the fact of the matter is that it's not necessarily raw feeding that is this magical elixir of life that can cure dogs' ills, you know?
And I think, and it's interesting because that really what they're often doing is just doing an exclusion diet, right? Because they're selecting one protein and maybe one carbohydrate or and like you say, they're just simplifying it. And certainly I see, the majority of patients that I would see that require some sort of dietary modification are those with kind of chronic enteropathy or whatever. And I think that certainly is my experience, is that people are just selecting kangaroo and going with that.
Novel protein. Or they're eliminating all of the other things that they feed that they maybe don't mention in the vet clinic or that they don't actually think are part of the exclusion diet that they're doing. It's like, oh, this one little thing won't hurt. But actually, if you radically change that your philosophy on feeding your dog and buy this very different product, and you're hearing from everyone else, never feed any of that junk that you did over there, then you stop all of that stuff and things get better. But not because it's raw. And the other kind of scenario where there is some evidence, but it gets trotted out as far more important or wide-ranging as than it is dental benefits. So you'll hear people saying, my dog's teeth are much better and cleaner on raw food, or he doesn't have smelly breath anymore. There is a paper to show that feeding raw meaty bones to your dog will actively reduce the amount of plaque and calculus on the teeth and reduce the rate of buildup of plaque and calculus over time. But that's not all raw feeding. That's a very specific thing where you're feeding large, meaty knuckles of bone to the dog, and the dog is abrading the surface of the teeth by chewing and chewing and chewing and producing saliva. And there are dental outcomes that are beneficial there, but it's a very specific thing. You know, I had a client once that claimed, you know, her huskies had the best teeth in the area because she fed raw food. And I found out she was feeding pigs' heads to them on the kitchen floor. Well, most people are not feeding pigs' heads. They're feeding a package of like minced raw meat type stuff to their dog in the kitchen that is not going to have any dental benefits. So people misconstrue what the actual claim is or what the actual evidence is. It's not across the board. Raw feeding is better for teeth. So that's a very specific paper that had shown.
I just wouldn't have pigs' heads in my house. I don't know, like I think there's a choice there. Even a meaty bone. I don't want that in my house either. So I don't
Yeah, I mean, do dogs enjoy
Well,
it? Yes, they do, because that's a great natural
but
behavior
no,
and
I'm still
enrichment
not.
source for them. So, okay, does raw feeding enrich my dog's behavior? Probably not. Does feeding raw meaty bones or whole animal parts? Yes, it does. So, you know, this subtleties.
People can say, correct me if I'm wrong, people can say with relative confidence that based on current scientific published peer-reviewed literature, there is not huge amounts of evidence that you can go and say, look here, here, and here, here are the papers. There is not huge amounts of evidence that say raw is absolutely the thing to do.
Yeah, a lot of the claims on health outcomes due to raw feeding have not been backed up by convincing evidence. So there's where I'm saying, if you want to feed raw, you can, but you need to be careful of, you know, nutritional imbalances. You need to be careful of food hygiene and safety. And a lot of and I would say to clients or people I'm talking to about this, actually, there isn't much evidence to suggest that, you know, this happens or that's a benefit. And I think the philosophy on it also is quite flawed. You know, you've got this whole trend in pet nutrition in recent years to be ancestral diets and the dog as wolf hypothesis, you know, and dogs are carnivores and we shouldn't be feeding dogs grains and plant material because they're carnivores like the wolf. That ignores the entire origin of the domestic dog, because the domestic dog evolved from a common wolf ancestor of today's grey wolf. It's not today's grey wolf that was the ancestor. And one of the things that sets dogs apart in an evolutionary perspective or a biological perspective, is that dogs developed a enzyme called amylase 2B to digest plant starches, because the domestic dog almost domesticated itself in several regions around the world at different times by coming in and scavenging on our leftovers when we changed from hunter-gatherer societies to agriculturalists. And when we learned to domesticate wheat and cereal crops, depending where you were in the world, and we had a lot of food leftovers, and the dog ancestors came and scavenged those and learned, or they developed the ability to digest them, and then they absolutely skyrocketed in their success. So the fundamental difference between a domestic dog and a wolf is it's not a carnivore, it's a scavenging omnivore. And it also displays, by the way, coprophagy, eating excrement, because the dogs that really thrived were the ones that weren't only feeding in our food dumps, they were feeding in our latrine sites as well. They were eating human excrement. So if you look at the history of the domestic dog, it's a biologically totally different animal. And to say that raw food is biologically appropriate and feeding, an omnivorous diet to a dog is not natural, that fundamentally ignores where the dog origin story is and came from.
Karen, did you know that?
That's fascinating.
That is just so cool. I didn't know any of that. I didn't know any of
There's
that.
where my biology nerd comes in, and
You, that is so cool. Okay. That's another podcast. Can we do another podcast about evolution? And I feel maybe we should have our own podcast on, and I can just interview you all the time about all of this cool stuff. Right. Anyway, so that's super, and that's really that's quite empowering, I think, for listeners to be able to be to delve a bit more into that. And that's a really I love that. That's knowledge is power there. That's an example where you really, if you really understand that, then that's actually such a powerful thing to be able to communicate, because the headline on Facebook is definitely dogs are wolves. So, and my Chihuahua cross Cavalier King Charles is not a wolf, I can guarantee, and does eat his own shit. So there you go. Okay, so then again, in a scientific way, when people are sort of saying, okay, owners are saying, right, so then what are the sort of risks then of feeding a raw diet? What would you say the key risk factors or potentially downsides of the raw feeding are?
The two main categories are nutritional balance. So, is this a balanced and appropriate diet, complete diet? And secondly, microbiological concerns or food hygiene concerns. I just go backward for a second and just say some of the other sort of claims on raw food are my dog has better stools. Well, how do you value stools? You can pick them up better because they're tiny and hard and there's no fiber. And, I heard a very well known advocate, veterinary advocate of raw feeding, talk about his dog is, eating offal and bones and all sorts of things, and then also loves to go out in the field and eat the sheep poo and the horse poo. That sounds like pica to me. That sounds like that dog is searching and scavenging for fiber and plant material. Does that stack up? So there's that. There's also some papers that kind of claim as benefit evidence, and it says there's a difference in the microbiome between raw-fed dogs versus cooked food or kibble diets. But there's no so what. Of course, there's a difference in the microbiome depending on radically different diets and things. So there's lots of stuff that's kind of touted as evidence, but it's not really evidence when you scrutinize it. In terms of the risks, so if we start with nutritional balance, a lot of the raw feeding movement kind of advocates step away from commercially prepared diets and make your own. And if you throw in, the irony is, if you throw in, a bit of minced meat, some lamb's kidneys, a chicken foot, a duck egg, a bit of sprinkling of spirulina and some powders and potions and this, and it's this incredible looking bowl of things. That's an amazing natural diet and brilliant elixir for your dog's health, and your dog's going to be fantastic. In the same breath, the proponents that are advocating that will say that animal byproducts or meat and animal derivatives that are used in traditional pet food and go into kibble are terrible ingredients for pets. Hooves and feathers and hides and things picked off the factory floor. But it's not. It's the parts of the animal that we don't tend to eat in the human food chain ourselves that are perfectly nutritious, delicious, biologically appropriate, and should be used in pet food. And cooking the pet food and creating a dry kibble from those nutritious, delicious, biologically appropriate ingredients gives it a shelf life and gives it a safety profile that you're not going to get salmonella, most likely. There's a few cases, obviously, in mass-produced pet food every year, but you're very unlikely to get salmonella or E. coli, from your bag of kibble. You're extremely likely, I think one study showed 40 something times magnitude of risk in getting it from bits of raw animal that you keep in your freezer or fridge and feed to your dog in a bowl, and your dog licks your child's face or wipes its mouth on the carpet or the cushion. So the magnitude of risk is sometimes exaggerated by proponents saying you can also get salmonella from dry food. You can, but you're not addressing magnitude. So that's the safety element from a microbiological point of view. But it's been shown over and over again, basically loads and loads of studies have analyzed both commercially available raw food and DIY kind of homemade recipes, and they found them lacking in many, many nutrients, vitamins and minerals, and calcium phosphorus balance in particular is very difficult. It's hard to formulate a complete and balanced diet for a dog at every life stage. That's why we train, board certified nutritionists to do it. So I would say my advice now is if you are going to feed raw, feed from a commercial raw company that has a qualified animal nutritionist formulating those diets. Do not try and do it at home because it's been over and over again. You're getting it wrong, and there will be long-term deficiencies.
I think just that process point that's something I think that comes up a lot, that word processed, right? And I think, I suppose, in human, I suppose that maybe this comes a little bit from the fact that in as human beings, we are actively trying to avoid processed food, whatever that means, where we are trying to, eat the raw thing and give our kids things that are not full of salt and sugar and ready meals, so I think that kind of narrative about processed food, would you agree that that kind of there's a crossover there, and that word means something different on both sides of the nutritional landscape?
It is confusing. Yeah, I agree. It is confusing because we hear steer clear of processed food in the human field of nutrition. But processed pet food is different, and a lot of raw pet food is processed. Processing means a lot of things. It can be freezing, it can be storing, chopping, mixing. Most responsible raw food needs to be processed and have a shelf life as well. But processed pet food, if we just talk about kibble, so cooked food that's put into a mixing bowl, it's create formulated to be complete and balanced once it's cooked, and that the heat kind of treatment is factored into nutrient availability and things. That complete and balanced diet that's processed, that sort of diet doesn't exist really in human food. So it's not the same thing
It's
as
different.
junk food or high in saturated fat or, burgers and chips and stuff like that. That's
It's
often touted.
different.
I wouldn't feed that. It's like feeding McDonald's to my dog. It's not. It's like feeding airspace, aeronauts kind of diets. Or there's now a few products online, available that are for complete and balanced meal replacements and things. But it's that high tech nutrition and years and decades of research and scientific studies that have gone into being able to formulate a diet that gives your pet everything it needs at every life stage and keeps it healthy. We've come on a long way in nutrition. So it's a false equivalency, basically.
Astronaut food, we can maybe ask Katy Perry, she would know. I think that but actually, and I think for me, and again, my with the kind of clinical work that I do, again, it's about also having foods that are then available for very specific conditions that actually do have scientific evidence that show that we can prolong the life of chronic kidney disease patients by giving them a certain type of food. Like, it's not, that's a fact. These pets will live longer with this condition if you feed them this food. A paper came out this week again supporting the use of certain diets with patients with chronic enteropathy. And actually, in some studies, over 80% of them will improve with their clinical symptoms just with diet alone.
Diet change,
And
yeah.
so it's there's there. There is evidence to really support the use of diets in so many different ways. You talked a little bit about kind of top tips. Like, I think, what is there a kind of, again, it's all about having this conversation, but any other sort of top tips or sort of little nuggets of wisdom as far as having this conversation pet owners or our clients?
Yeah, so I think like starting gentle and not going in all guns blazing or finger wagging or, you know, saying I know more than you is really, really the first place to start. Ask questions, you know, why are you concerned about other diets or why have you chosen raw? And then maybe just start to tease apart some of the logic they've been sold. You know, if it's that case of, well, dogs are carnivores. Oh no, actually, dogs aren't carnivores. It's kind of a common misconception that like they evolved from wolves, therefore they're the same. But actually, they're designed to be omnivores and eat plant and animal material. And then maybe just busting some of the myths that, you know, oh, pet nutrition is the cause for all of our dogs' cancers and da da da. And it's like, actually, probably pedigree breeding and line breeding and our declining genetic health of our dogs in particular is the cause of a lot of disease, whereas nutrition has extended the lifespan. And it's kind of an inconvenient rebuttal, maybe to some of the more passionate people when they say, dogs are living less and dogs are, you know, not living long lives. It's because of commercial food. When actually millions and millions and millions of dogs, the vast majority of dogs for decades now, have lived on these very commercial foods. Sometimes the ones that people are guilt tripping owners about, you know, bottom shelf supermarket and still living to ripe old ages of 16, 17, 18. So that's an inconvenient truth. But then I think the way to kind of gently persuade or to be supportive and educational, as I said, is to say, if you're going to do it, look, there's some risks involved. Don't DIY it because it's been shown over and over again that you're not going to get it right. You're not a nutritionist. Neither am I, you know, empathize and get on their level. I'm not either. I couldn't formulate a diet to save my life if that's the case. So please don't do it yourself. Find a brand of raw food that employs qualified animal nutritionists and go with them. And then let's talk about the safety profile. Let's talk about your household, your family. So I've touched on the fact that there are microbial risks and disease risks. You know, we cook our raw food, raw meat for a reason. It makes it safer to consume. And although dogs and cats can tolerate certain bugs in their food a lot better than we could without getting, you know, diarrhea and vomiting and things like that, there's still risks in terms of transmission to humans of those bacteria. So if you live in a household, for example, where you have young, old, immunocompromised, or pregnant people, then I would be saying as a vet, or as veterinary professionals, we have a duty of care to advise on that and say, for the time being, while you've got young, old, immunocompromised, or pregnant people in your household or near family, near around your dog, it's probably not the best time to be feeding raw food because there's significant risks there to those people and their compromised health, maybe. And there's been cases of zoonotic disease. You know, there's two very high profile cases of tuberculosis, bovine tuberculosis in cats, which have been traced back to two different commercially available, quite well respected raw brands in the UK. And some of them have been transmitted to people as well. You know, and a lot of cats have died because of the illness that resulted. So just, I think, not scaremongering, not finger wagging, but just explaining that, do you know what? The pros list is long, but actually there's not a lot of evidence to support some of those claims. The risks are very high, especially if you have these kind of people in your household. If you're going to do it, go with a commercially available nutritionist formulated one, but be very careful of food hygiene. Maybe have a separate freezer. Maybe be careful of bowls. You know, wipe your dog's mouth. You know, all this kind of stuff. But actually, you know, the evidence on the risk side really, really stacks up to be quite worrying. And that's why a lot of vets don't advocate for raw feeding. You know, we see that back to those bacteria or parasites even coming out in dog's feces on the other end as well. We see, you know, transmission, we see fomite transmission in the home of pathogenic, you know, organisms that can cause illness. So I just think that until we get really much more convincing evidence, you could even say, cook the raw food. It makes it a magnitude safer than feeding it raw in its form. The only kind of thing on that caveat on that is if you cook it, you will alter the nutritional composition of the food. But cooked traditional foods take that into account and they're formulated based on that. So yeah, I just can't see the fascination with it really.
And I know, I think actually really great advice, you know, just if you're going to do it, let's do it in a way that we know is balanced. And I think that's in itself, that's really valuable, actually. If you're going to do it, then make a good choice about it. You know, that's, you know, and I suppose we live in a world where people, we you know, we have choices and we have to make those and every day and look at, you know, so many different elements. But I think that's really, really valuable. So just to kind of finish up, where do we go from here? Like, I think, you know, because it does, you know, this does feel like a bit of a messy, it feels a bit messy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you agree, like, it's just a bit messy. So how do we move forward from here in a kind of positive way? Like, where do we go with this chat?
Yeah, it's a good one. I think as a profession, we sometimes are a little too shy of having a stance on something.
Not everyone.
but I think we do have this kind of, you know, oh, I don't want to rock the boat, or I don't want to offend clients, or, you know, whatever. I think if you adopt an evidence-based, and again, I keep people repeating it, but supportive educational tone on things that you know to be true currently, but you still have an open mind for future evidence that comes in, I think we can be part of the discussion and bring over some of the people who have been misled or misguided and don't need to be feeding a food every day, twice a day, in their kitchens, in their homes, that does pose a risk to their family. We can bring over some. We're not going to bring over everyone. And there's no point getting angry or jumping into things, you know, aggressively, or coming out all guns blazing against something that a lot of people are doing. But I think just being calm, evidence-based, supportive, and saying, here's what we know currently, you know, here's the real risk factors for that I would strongly advise these people not to be feeding raw or using raw in their homes for concern for you. Here are some of the claims that raw proponents make, but actually the evidence doesn't stack up for these reasons. We would recommend and make a recommendation. I don't think that's controversial, you know.
No.
I don't think, but it's part of our remit, isn't it, to advise and to advocate for the welfare of animals.
Yeah, exactly.
And from a One Health approach, the welfare of people as well. Oh, and just finally, speaking on a One Health approach, the other thing that's coming to the fore on this is that there's lots of studies coming out showing multi-drug resistance in bacteria in raw diets, which is a real concern as well, you know, in these times with antibiotic resistance. So that's just another thing that we need to be concerned about and mindful of.
Yeah. Very cool. No, that's... No, really, really interesting. So I wonder, you know, people are always keen to hear more about these controversies in sort of diets and different things. I wonder if you could sort of signpost any resources that you are maybe find particularly helpful. And also, I think maybe highlighting opportunities to come and maybe see you speak a little bit more in some of these topics, if that's okay.
I'll be doing a few talks on this topic later in the year. So the webinarvet.com, I'm going to be doing a couple of webinars there, one on sustainability in pet food and one on kind of myths and misconceptions. I'm also speaking at London Vet Show on top tips to discuss pet nutrition with your clients. So that will be in November. And then there's a few good kind of certified nutrition vets talking about these topics and trends on the Webinar Vet, as well as free webinars. So that's a good resource to look
great.
At. Yeah.
Great. Well, we hope to see you at London Vet Show. That's very exciting. Thank you very much for chatting with us about this today. I find that so interesting. And that will, I'm not just saying this because you're here in front of me, but I genuinely will, that's useful to me in the conversations that I have in my practice. So really genuinely just very, very helpful. So thanks so much for chatting to us about all of that today.
Thanks very much for having me on, Scott.
A massive thank you to Sean again today for having that chat. I really hope you found that useful. Some great tips there to really empower us to have those discussions, and hopefully you find that helpful. Please head over to the show notes to learn a little bit more about Sean. We'll share some resources there. And also to learn a little bit more about what VTX do. You can also head over to www.vtx-cpd.com And as always, if you have any ideas of clinical segment discussions you would like us to have and guests you would like to see featured, then please let us know. A massive thank you again to all of you for listening. I look forward to seeing you all again next time.